So I want to pick up in December the 8th, 1923, and this is volume 16. This is on the Immaculate Conception of the Virgin and how she was conceived in the merits, works and pains of the Incarnate Word. I was thinking about the Immaculate Conception of my Queen Mother, and after I received Holy Communion, my beloved Jesus made himself seen in my interior. That's your Luke 17:21. As though inside a room, which is a space, which was all light, which is 1 Timothy 6:16, God lives in unapproachable light. In this light, he showed everything he had done during the course of his life. Now notice that everything is present, and once he brings her into this light, she can see everything because it's all there. One could see lined up in order all his merits, his works, his pains, his wounds and his blood, everything that the life of a man and God contained. As though in the act of preserving a soul so very dear to him from the slightest evil that could possibly shadow her. So in this light, she sees everything, and therefore she can see what happens in the conception of Blessed Mother. It's all present. Louisa said, I was amazed at seeing so much attention of Jesus. And he said to me, to my little newborn, I want to make known the Immaculate Conception of the Virgin conceived without sin. Now, first of all, you must know that my divinity is one single act. To me, that's the fiat. Now, the scientists call this a singularity. It's one single point. Everything is there, past, present and future. A singularity is what they call it. So the scientists are getting very, very close to actually naming the singularity. And they've got even further. I watched this, you see, on the science programs. They've got even further. They said, someone has to be behind the Big Bang. And I said, well, aren't you getting there? Now, we could tell you, but, you know, you've got to find out for yourself. So my divinity is one single act. All acts concentrate in a single act. All acts in the divine will are in that one act. Okay. This is what it means to be God, the greatest portent of our divine essence, not to be subject to a succession of acts. And we've got to make lots of acts. He makes one. And if to the creature it seems that we do something now and then we do something else, it's rather that we make known what is present in our single act. We're inside of time and space. He's outside of time and space. So it's just simply manifested to us. He makes it known. In fact, since the creature is incapable of knowing it all at once, we make it known little by little. Now, we've proved that in our educational system. We only give children information piece by piece and year on year. And it's the same. Jesus has told us it's the same in the divine will. He only gives it to us sip by sip because you couldn't take it all in. Now, everything that I, the eternal word, was to do in my assumed humanity formed one single act. So the whole point here is God is one act. So it formed one single act with that single act of my, which my divinity contains. So his humanity is now one single act in that one single act of the divinity. Therefore, before this noble creature was conceived, everything that the divine word was to do upon earth already existed. Okay. The pre-existent word, and the pre-existent word is all over the Old Testament. Okay. So I'm not going to give you one reference for it. It's all over the place. I have a set of CDs on the subject. And so in the act in which this virgin was conceived, all of my merits, my pains, my blood. You need to get a chair for it. Everything that the life of the man God, we'd say the man God, not a man and God, as if it was two, the man God, contained, lined up around her conception. In other words, the the gift of the fullness of redemption that was given to our Blessed Mother, that we call the Immaculate Conception, were the fruits of the merits of Jesus in his redemption. She just got them ahead of time. And we can say ahead of time because we're in time. Everything is eternal with God. Excuse me a second. So everything lined up around her conception. And she was conceived in the endless abysses of my merits. Now look at the words. The endless abysses of Jesus' merits means that he could have redeemed millions of worlds because all of his acts were infinite. Or infinite, perfect and eternal, as you're used to hearing. In the endless abysses of my merits and of my divine blood, so it wasn't just human blood, and in the immense sea of my pains, so the immense sea means immeasurable. So everything is not just human, it's also divine. By virtue of them, she remained immaculate. That means that she benefited more from redemption than anybody else. No matter what canonized saints we have, none of them could have received as much redemption as she did because she had it full and complete. Okay. So it's true to say that he died more for her than anybody else since she benefited the most from it. She remained immaculate, beautiful and pure. My incalculable merits barred the enemy's way and he could do no harm to her. So she's protected from the very first instant of her being. It was right that the one who was to conceive the Son of God first be conceived in the works of this God. This is terribly important. That she was conceived in him before he was conceived of her. Okay, and all the saints have talked about that, okay. So beside that, I want to give you 1 Corinthians 4:7. What have you that you have not received? Because as a creature, she had to receive everything from God in order to be able to give it to him. So she had to first be conceived in the works of this God to be able to have the power of conceiving that word who was to come to redeem mankind. So first, she was conceived in me. This is exactly what the saints have said. And then I was conceived in her. There was nothing left but to make it known to the rest of humanity at the appropriate time. But in the divinity, it was as though already done. Wonderful stuff, isn't it? Okay. Therefore, the one who most gathered the fruits of redemption, or rather who received its complete fruit, was this excelling creature. Having been conceived in the divine will, she loved, she esteemed, and she kept as her own everything that the Son of God did upon the earth. Oh, the beauty of this tender little one. She was a prodigy of grace, a portent of our divinity. She grew up as our daughter. She was our decorum, our joy, our honour and our glory. That's exactly what the church sang of her until we dropped the Latin. You are the glory of Jerusalem, the joy of Israel and the honour of our people. While my sweet Jesus was saying this, I was thinking in my mind, it's true that the Queen Mother was conceived in the endless merits of my Jesus, but her blood, her body, were conceived in the womb of St. Anne. Now, I love the way Louisa doesn't let him away with anything, and she comes back with her own reasoning, okay? And so St. Anne was not, Joachim and Anne were not exempt from original sin. So she wants to know how a child could be born of two people who had original sin and not have original sin. Louisa is asking our question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's actually asking our question. She doesn't need this herself. So how can it be that she inherited nothing of the many evils that we've all inherited from the sin of our first father, Adam? So here's a very important answer from Jesus. Jesus said, "My daughter, you've not yet understood that all evil is in the will." Now, I think you need to put a green, white and gold marker on that one. All evil is in the will. In all the volumes up to now, you've heard Jesus saying to Louisa when she's struggling, "Don't put your will into it." You've heard him say it over and over again. Okay, you're struggling and, you know, your body wants to be resentful. Don't put your will into it. You know, the priests have been very hard on you and, you know, your body wants to react. Don't put your will into it. The sin is in the will. Isn't that very interesting? Mm-hmm. It was the will that overwhelmed man, and that is his human nature. It simply says his nature here. It means his human nature. It was not his human nature that overwhelmed the will of man. That's a terribly important insight into the fall of Adam. A terribly important insight. It was not the apple that brought Adam down. If I can say something that sounds totally stupid, it was Adam that brought the apple down. It was Adam's will that sinned. That's terribly important. So it was not his nature that overwhelmed the will of man. His human nature remained in its place. But the body, you see, has to participate in whatever the will decides. Just as it was created by me, nothing changed. It was his will that changed. Do you put a VIP on this, will you? Because you're getting an emphasis here that's terribly important for everywhere else in these writings. It was his will that changed. It, that is the human will, put itself against no less than a divine will. Now, here is the essence of the message about the human will against the divine will. And this rebellious will overwhelmed his nature, debilitated it, contaminated it, and rendered it a slave to the most vile passions. It was the fall of the will. So John 8:44, anyone who sins is a slave. And so it rendered him a slave to vile passions. Because if the will falls, then that's your highest faculty. Where do you go to try and live a healthy religious life, a moral life? It happened, Jesus said, as to a container. Now, that expression, "it happened as to," is not something that we say. We'd say it's like. It's like a container full of perfumes or of precious things. If it's emptied of these and then filled with rot or vile things, does the container perhaps change? No, the contents do. What is placed inside of it changes, but the container is always the same. So if you have a piece of Waterford glass with rot inside of it, it's still Waterford glass and the rot is still rot. Okay, but you have to distinguish the two. Now notice the way Jesus is distinguishing between the will and the human nature that's holding that person. What is placed inside of the container changes, but the container is always the same. And at the most, it becomes more or less estimable, we would say precious, depending on what it contains. He said that was the same way with the human being. Now, being conceived in a creature who is Joachim and Anne, okay, particularly Anne, from a human race, did no harm to my mother because her soul was immune from any sin. The soul that was put into that little thing that was about to develop into a person, that was completely protected by God. There was no division between her will and that of her God. So he makes it clear that what we call the Immaculate Conception is that the moment she became a being, she was already completely redeemed. And her will was already cemented in the divine will forever. And so the fiat that she gave as an adult simply was her signature on paper. But that was already given totally. Her soul was immune from any sin. There was no division between her will and that of her God. So this is the position of Adam before the fall. The divine currents found no obstacle or opposition in pouring themselves upon her. In every instant, she was under the pouring rain of new graces. Now notice the abundance that's being described there. Pouring rain. So with this will and this soul, all holy, all pure, all beautiful, the container of her body, which she received from her mother, remained fragrant, rehabilitated, ordered, divinized in such a way as to remain exempt also from all the natural maladies by which the human nature is invaded. So if she was preserved from sin, she was also preserved from the sickness and the debilitation and everything that went with it. Now, she did go through death, but we call that her passing. Sickness, sin, death and hell are the four consequences of the fall. Okay. So there was nothing in her in rebellion against herself or in rebellion against God or in rebellion against anything else. So there was no, we correctly call illness dis-ease. Okay. And it is also correctly called disorder. And so she never had dis-ease or disorder. I think that's a better way to put it. Okay. She was precisely the one who received the seed of the fiat voluntas tua on earth as it is in heaven, which ennobled her and restored her to her origin. There's the origin before the fall. As man was created by us before he sinned. Even more, she surpassed it because of the profusion of grace that was given to her in redemption. She was embellished even more through the continuous flows of that fiat, which alone has the power of reproducing images fully similar to the one who created them. Now, let me read that again. So she had all this grace, she had all this prevention, and she had the fullness of redemption. Now, she was embellished even more through the continuous flows of that divine will, that divine yes that was in her, which alone has the power of reproducing images fully similar to the one who created them. That's Romans 8:29. That we become the image of Christ. Now, that image was given to us initially in Genesis 1:27. And by virtue of this divine will that acted upon her, it can be said that what God is by nature, she is by grace. And the only comment I would give you on that is that God can only make something like himself. There is no other model. There is no other version of reality. He is the model. He is the reality. Now, Jesus also tells us in these writings of Louisa that is what he's trying to do with us as well. That he's trying to make us by grace what he is by nature. And that'll happen when we live fully 24/7, 365 in the divine will as distinct from going in and out. So it demands this very high union with God. Okay. So what God is by nature, she is by grace. Our will can do anything and it can reach anywhere. Mark 10:27. Nothing is impossible with God. Our will can do anything and reach anywhere. It's the kind of little thing that I like writing on a tiny little post-it note and put it beside me where I'm praying. The divine will can do anything and reach anywhere. It just helps you to go and actually let him do it. It can reach anywhere when the soul gives us the freedom to act and does not interrupt our work with her own will. Now, notice that we interrupt. Mm-hmm. Ephesians 2:10, we're God's work of art created in Christ Jesus, and he will finish the work. He will finish the work as Philippians 1:6. Philippians 1:6. He will finish the work if we don't stop him. So December the 26th, 1923, we're going to be talking about acts in the divine will. Louisa said, I went through most bitter days because of the privation of my sweet Jesus. I felt like a most wretched rag which Jesus had put aside because it was disgusting to him, so dirty as it was. Isaiah 64:6 uses exactly the same image. And in my interior, I heard being said to me, in my will, there are no rags. How can you be a rag in the divine will when it's the highest expression of union with God? And everything is life. So I want to give you Romans 3, verses 10 to 11. And it's not just life, it's divine life. A rag is torn, it becomes dirty because it does not have life. While in my will, which contains life, all life comes from the divine will and gives life to everything, there's no danger that the soul may be torn to pieces or even get dirty. Now, the get dirty is sin. Okay. And there's no way you can have sin in the divine will. So you put there your Hebrews 12:14 again. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. And also 1 John 3:5, that those who are truly in union with God don't sin. Not paying attention to this, I thought to myself, I loved when Louisa said I wasn't paying attention. There was he talking and I wasn't paying attention. Now, that's probably our position more frequently than we want to admit. But he wouldn't be as physically manifested to you as he was to her. It's the incredible. It's like you're sitting on your mother's knee or your father's knee and he's talking to you and you're not paying any attention. And then you ask him something completely irrelevant and he said, but weren't you listening? And that's her position, this extraordinary intimacy, and she can still switch off from it. And I think what you're looking at is her free will. Her will is completely free. It's got to be given all the time. It's fascinating. So she was thinking about Christmas when he was talking about that. Isn't that absolutely amazing? It's a good time of the year to read this. So not paying attention, I thought to myself, what beautiful Christmas holidays is Jesus making me spend? It shows how much he loves this. It's December the 26th. And he moving in my interior, there's your Luke 17:21. said, my daughter, for one who does my will, it's always Christmas. Mm-hmm. Now, some people are so devoted to Christmas, they want it every day of the year. Mm-hmm. Some of the rest of us don't want it at all mm-hmm. because of what they've done with it. It's always Christmas. As the soul enters my will, I am conceived in her act. Now, watch this. So this is a comment on Christmas. As the soul enters my will, so we fuse. I am conceived in her act. As she goes on performing her act, I carry out my life. As she completes the act, I rise again and the soul remains conceived in me, carries out her life in mine and rises again in my acts. Isn't that incredible? So, what is being said here is that with each act, we have a resurrection experience to divine life. With each act, we have a resurrection experience to divine life. See then how Christmas holidays are for those who prepare themselves and place themselves in my grace once a year. And so they feel something new about my birth within themselves. But for one who lives in my will, my book always says, does my will. It's always Christmas. I am born again in each one of her acts. Isn't that incredible? So, would you want me to be born in you once a year? No. For one who lives in my will, my birth, my life, my death and my resurrection must be a continuous act, never interrupted. Otherwise, what would be the difference, the immeasurable distance from the other sanctities? That's lovely there, isn't that? Isn't that a wonderful point? The people who are in their ordinary sanctity are celebrating Christmas once a year. You have it every time you do an act. It's absolutely fantastic, isn't it? So we have this extraordinary privilege of the Lord being born again in us in every act. And so we are born again into divine life at every act. I don't know what you do without that. I just say to the Lord, I want to fuse myself. I say it longer than this. I want to fuse myself in you all the time. I don't want to break in it. And so when I remember it again, I say, this is for all the time. I want this at every moment. I don't want any break in this. But you have to say, I think you have to repeat it for yourself, not for him. He heard you the first time. But we can forget. And so that's why I repeat it to myself every now and then. I say, Lord, I want this all the time. No break. It must be a continuous act, never interrupted. Otherwise, if we only experience Christmas the way other people experience Christmas, we have not touched the, he said, immeasurable distance between ordinary sanctity and the divine will sanctity. Now, I'm going to talk to you in detail about that in Drumantine, because I think people may not have got really what's being said. It's terribly important. So on hearing this, Louisa said, I felt more embittered. And I thought to myself, how much fantasy this hearing is nothing other than a most subtle pride on my part. Only my pride would suggest this to me and reach the point of making me write so many things on the will of God. The others, that means all the other people living the ordinary sanctity, okay? The others are good and they're humble, and that's why no one has ever dared to write anything, you see. Now, Louisa is the first with this revelation. Of course she's having problems like this. How could I be right? And, you know, I'm seemingly saying that all of them are living at an immeasurably low distance from me. It does look like pride, you see, superficially. And so she's right in thinking this way. And while I was thinking of this, I felt such pain as to feel my heart break, and I tried to distract myself so as not to feel anything. I love that. Instead of saying, what is the pain? Why do I feel pain from having said this? Isn't somebody saying he's having pain? Okay. What a terrible struggle to the point of feeling myself dying. Then while I was in this state, my beloved Jesus made himself seen as though wanting to say more about his most holy will. But Louisa said, my Jesus, help me. Don't you see how much pride there is in me? Have pity on me. Free me from this subtle pride. I don't want to know anything. It's enough for me to love you. Now, what she's saying is, look, this business is too big. It's too great. Look, it's enough for me just to love you. And that's escaping from the mission that's actually given to her. It's only a temptation. He's not going to let her away with it, of course. I don't want to know anything except it's enough for me to love you. And Jesus said, my daughter, crosses, sorrows, pains are like a press, a wine press, that is, for the soul. Just as the wine press serves to crush and peel the grapes in such a way that the wine remains on one side and the skin on the other, in the same way, crosses and pains, like a press, peel the soul of pride, of love of self, of passions, and of all that is human, leaving the pure wine of virtue behind. Mm-hmm. Now you know why you'll never be free of crosses and pains and sufferings and etc. It's because this immense thing has got to happen in us, this separation of the human and the divine. So I want to give you Isaiah 63:3. And I want to give you Lamentations, L-A-M for Lamentations, chapter 1, verses 12 and 13. Lamentations 1, 12 to 13. So it's very important for us to know that if we are to reach the heights that the Lord wants us to reach, that he has to do extraordinary work of purification in us. There's no way out of that. There's absolutely no way out of it. And so my virtues find the way to communicate themselves and lay themselves within the soul as on a snow white canvas. Now, there's your Ephesians 2:10 again. We're a work in progress. And he does this writing with indelible characters. Now, that's Jeremiah 31, 31 to 34. I will write it on their hearts. Jeremiah 31, 31 to 34. Now, notice that the Lord wants a snow-white canvas to paint on. He doesn't want a dirty canvas or one that has any leftovers from any other painter, including ourselves. And so to get to the snow-white stage, we have to have the crosses and the sorrows and the pains working like a press on us. How can you fear then, Jesus said, if every time I've manifested to you my truths on my will, watch this, these truths are always preceded by crosses, sorrows and pains. Now, we have people in the process of being trained as teacher. I just want to give a tiny testimony here. I mean tiny as in a few sentences. I've noticed over the years when I was preparing to give retreats or conferences abroad, that the Lord put me through a ringer before I went. All hell would break loose, to use our Irish expression. And it would seem that the whole world was completely against me. But being put under the press was actually the price you had to pay to be God's instrument at that conference. And I would arrive at the conference thinking, I haven't got the energy to stand up. And then the Lord would allow me to actually read what was going on inside of everybody. I was able to actually tell them the answers to their problems. And they would come to me one after the other and say, how did you know what my problem was? You answered it absolutely accurately. I was going to sign up to talk to you. And before the conference would be finished, all their problems would be answered. Now, where did that come from? It came from the crosses, sorrows, pains and the press that was on the soul before you went. Is that any help? Therefore, you know, we need to do a lot of preparation for our coming conference. These truths are always preceded by crosses, sorrows and pains. In other words, someone has to pay for the grace that is given. And the higher the truths, the more intense and the stronger the pains. That's what Louisa experiences as she goes along. It was nothing other than the pressure of the press which I exercised in you in order to peel you of all that is human. Well, the Lord has to send stuff to us to release us from all that is human. We just can't let it go ourselves because we think we're letting it go and we don't know what we're letting go. It was in my interest, he said, more than yours, that these truths would not be mixed with the skin of human passions. Look at the expression that's being used. The skin of human passions. And Louisa said, my Jesus, forgive me if I'm telling you this, but you yourself are the cause of my fears. In other words, it's not my fault, it's you. If you did not leave me, if you did not hide and deprive me of yourself, there would be no place in me to let these fears arise. In other words, if you stayed with me and I was in ecstasy all day, every day, then we'd be grand. Well, the rest of us would too. Ah, Jesus, you make me die, but of cruel death and double death, because I don't die. Ah, if only I could experience death and die, how sweet it would be for me. That's your 2 Corinthians 5 again. 2 Corinthians 5, 1 to 10. That's St. Paul wanting to knock off the tent and go to heaven, you know. Mm-hmm. Ah, Jesus, she said, I'm telling you, I can bear no more. Either you take me with you or you remain with me, whichever you like. Because I'm going to heaven one way or the other. Either you're coming down or I'm going up. Not a bad way to communicate, is it? Now, while Louisa was saying this, Jesus clasped her in his arms and it was as if he was winding something with his hands. And she said, I was put as though through a press, crushed. Now, there she's asking him, listen, can I go to heaven or else heaven comes down to here? And he gets on with doing what he's talking about, which is the crosses and the pains and the sorrows. If I can put it this way, the surgeon gets on with the operation regardless of what the patient is saying. Does that make any sense? I myself am unable to tell the pain I felt within me, Louisa said. He alone knows what he made me suffer. And then afterwards he told me, beloved daughter of my will, look inside of me, how my supreme will conceded not even a breath of life to the will of my humanity. So Jesus is saying, look to me, I'm the model. Not one breath was allowed to the will that was in my humanity. As holy as this will in Jesus' humanity was, not even that was conceded to me. I was to remain under the pressure of a divine, infinite, endless will. Now we're going to hear more and more about that as we go on, as Louisa goes more and more under the pressure of a divine, infinite, endless will. More than oppressed, which constituted itself life, the life of each one of my heartbeats. Now notice that this infinite divine will constituted itself the life of everything in Jesus, his very heartbeat. Not only that, it was the life of all my words and all my acts. And my little human will died in each heartbeat, breath, act, word, etc. But it died in reality. That's the bit that we don't seem to think can happen. It died in reality, he said. It actually felt death because it never had life. Now, Jesus had to do this to pay the price for all of us to be able to rise in the divine will and to have the grace to put aside our own will. I had my human will only to make it die continuously. And even though this was a great honour for my humanity and the greatest of portents, each death of my human will was substituted by a life of the divine will. Now notice, each time you do it, you create a divine life. See it? Each time you set aside the human will and let the divine will take over, creates a divine life. However, this continuous dying was the greatest, the hardest, the most bitter and the most painful martyrdom of my humanity. Would you ever put NB or something 1 foot tall beside that? If Jesus found it the hardest sacrifice to make, that is why you and I find it the hardest sacrifice to make. Oh, how the pains of my passion become little before this continuous dying of mine, expressed very well in Gethsemane when he was under terrible pressure, not my will, but thine be done. And in this alone, I completed the perfect glory of my celestial Father. So he's telling us how we can give perfect glory to the Heavenly Father by making the human will die and let the divine will take over. And I loved him with a love that surpasses any other love of all creatures. Look at that. I loved him with a love that surpasses any other love of all creatures. To die, to suffer, to do something great a few times at intervals, that's not very great. Oh dear, would you ever put a marker on that one? Because I don't know about you, but some of us might be there. That you can do it every now and then. You might even do it every now and then every day. But it's not all the time. It's the all the time, the continuous thing. So he says to do it every now and then, it's not so great. The saints, the good and other creatures have also worked, suffered and died. That's John 14:12. My disciples will do the same works as I did. John 14:12. So the saints, the good and the other creatures also have worked, have suffered, have died. But since it was not a continuous suffering, doing, and dying. It constitutes neither a perfect glory to the Father nor a redemption that can be extended to all. In other words, it's limited. Therefore, my newborn daughter, in my eternal will, see now where your Jesus calls you and wants you. That's in this continuous martyrdom. Under the press of my divine will, so that your will may receive continuous death, just as my human will did. Otherwise, I could not make the new era arise. Somebody has to do it continuously. So the new era can't arise unless Louisa actually reaches this point, in which my will may come to reign upon the earth. It takes the continuous act. Now, that's something the Lord's putting in front of you tonight. The continuous act in the divine will. The continuous killing off of the human will. Not my will, but thine be done. I think that has to be the motto. Some people just simply say fiat, fiat, but that actually doesn't do it for me. I have to say, not my will, but thine be done, to make it absolutely clear. One is going, the other is being chosen. Okay. And it's very good to say it when things are going against you and human nature would like to fight back. It might like to assert its own rights, and you may even be right. Do you know what I mean? But it's in the moments of trial and the cross that's where it becomes very, very, very grace-filling. Not my will, but thine be done. And it can happen in very small things. It doesn't have to be great things. Because I think everyday life is made up of small things rather than big things. Otherwise, he said, it takes the continuous act. I'm going to repeat this: continuous pains, continuous deaths, in order to be able to snatch the fiat voluntas tua from heaven. So this is VIP now. Beware, my daughter, do not look at others. Do not look at my other saints. Why? No matter how great they were living a spirituality that was much lower than what you're being asked to live. Do you see where you can distract yourself? Do not look at the way I conducted myself with them. Many of them worked miracles. Many of them did this and that and the other. They did marvelous things for God. He said, don't look at that. I'm doing something different with you. But we like looking at other people, don't we? And we like being as good as the Joneses, you know. And we like to feel that if they can work a miracle, I can work a miracle. But that's S-E-L-F, isn't it? So do not look at others. That's why I asked you to put a VIP on this one. Don't look at my other saints. Don't look at the way I conducted myself with them, which causes you to be surprised at the way I behave with you. This is a new spirituality. It's a new way of life. It's a new way of God dealing with us. And it can be difficult for us to let go of the past and bring it to the future. So I want to give you Isaiah 43, verses 18 and 19, where the Lord says, let the past go. I'm doing a new thing. Isaiah 43, verses 18 and 19. With them, I wanted to do one thing, but with you, I want to do something completely different. So if you go on YouTube and you're seeing that other people are working great miracles or doing this, that and the other, that's not what he's doing with you. He's doing something completely different. And if we concentrate on what he's doing with us, then his will can be done. But if I want to be like them and do this, that's me interfering. Okay, and it's just a great temptation of ours. You hear somebody working great miracles and say, well, I'm not doing anything, you know, I'm useless. And you're not looking at what he's actually asking you to do. So we have to come to the conclusion, and I would think you should write it down on on the page that divine will spirituality is completely different from all other spiritualities. See, because if I want to remember something, I'll actually write it on the book. Divine will spirituality is completely different. And Jesus says it's immeasurably greater than what was on offer before now. He says it. It's not just me. So as Jesus was saying this, he took the form of the crucified and he leaned his forehead on mine, Louisa said, laying himself over my whole person, and I remained under his pressure and all a prey to his divine will. So what we've just read now needs an enormous amount of attention individually. But let's come to December 29, 1923. Between Jesus and the soul who lives in his will, there is an eternal bond which renders them inseparable. Now, you've heard in the writings up to now, Jesus and his mother are inseparable. Jesus and Louisa have become inseparable. And then he's saying, this has all been revealed to you, not to tell you that something great happened to them, is that he wants you to get to that place as well. Isn't that amazing? Okay. So this is not just for us to throw bouquets at them. It's to take the same journey. Louisa said, I was praying when I found myself outside of myself in a place where there was a crucifix cast to the ground. I placed myself near it to adore and kiss Jesus' most holy wounds. But while I was doing this, the crucifix came alive. Jesus unnailed his hands from the cross and clung to my neck, clutching me very tightly. Fearing that it might not be Jesus, I tried to free myself from those clutches. And Jesus said, my daughter, why do you want to run away from me? How is it? Do you want to leave me? Don't you know that between you and me, there is an eternal bond? That means it can't be broken. There's no point in wriggling. It's an eternal bond. And it binds us together such that neither you nor I can detach ourselves. In other words, God has attached himself in this bond to Louisa, and he will not break a bond. You know, from your study of the Old Testament, he doesn't break any bonds that he makes. We're the ones who break bonds. It's an eternal bond. In fact, he said, what is eternal enters into me. Now, really note this. This is extremely important. What is eternal enters into me and becomes inseparable from me. Now, if I was to give you that in very simple English, it is that you go back to your source from which you came. And you cannot separate from that. That is your destiny. We are, each one of us is a spark that came out from the divine fire. And we've got to go back as a spark into that fire. You know, and so if we make this bond with the Lord and he agrees to this inseparable bond, that's it. It's complete. But the incredible thing is that when you die, you enter heaven with that eternal bond. It's utterly amazing. In fact, what is eternal enters into me and becomes inseparable from me. All the acts we have done together in my will are eternal acts. Just as my will is eternal. So, you have something of your own in me. They're all the acts you've done. And I have of my own in you. Because the divine will and the human will have actually married in union. An eternal vein flows within you, which renders us inseparable. And the more you continue and multiply your acts in my will, the more you take part in what is eternal. That's why it's important for us to multiply our acts to infinity. I always say to him, I want to multiply the acts to infinity for an infinitude of time. In other words, it covers every second of time. and then in it eternally as well. So where do you want to go? Jesus said. I was waiting for you to come and relieve me and free me from this place into which the human perfidy. Now, perfidy are human wills absolutely diametrically opposed to the divine. In which human perfidy has cast me, and with hidden sins and secret evils have barbarously crucified me. Now, I want to give you 2 Thessalonians 2:7. St. Paul calls hidden sins and secret evils the mystery of iniquity that works away in the human race. And one of the things that Jesus does, not only to Louisa, but we've been reading it in Ezekiel and in Jeremiah and other prophets as well, that he reveals the secrets that are going on in hidden places. He reveals the secret sins of the leaders of both church and state. And the Lord has been doing that for quite a long time in the church now as well, revealing to the world what has been going on secretly. Okay. He doesn't want anything. If he leaves things in secret, it's like leaving a cancer festering in your body, and it will just go to completion, it'll kill. But if he exposes it, he himself said, anything that's brought out into the light can be healed, if it's brought out into the light. And so that's the reason why the church has been disgraced in front of humanity, to get the pus out, that's all. So the hidden sins and the secret evils are the deadly stuff that kills the church. So this is why I clung to you. Now, this clinging of Jesus to Louisa. Last night we were doing a text in volume 11. It's just that at this moment I don't remember the date, in which Jesus said that the people who live in the divine will are his staffs. He deliberately used the word staff. Now, any of you who have done the book of Exodus know that the walking stick that Moses used, which had a curly head on it, was called the staff of Moses. And God told him that this was now going to become a sign. And he was going to work all his miracles, staff in hand. In the end, the Lord just simply says, staff in hand, and go ahead and work the miracle. That the staff became you leaning on the power of God, you leaning on the authority of God. So when Moses had to open the Red Sea, for example, the Lord said, staff in hand, the power of God will do this. Okay. But in volume 11, Jesus was saying to Louisa that the people who live in the divine will are his staffs, and he wants to lean on us. And this is what you're getting here, that he says to Louisa, but didn't you know I would come to lean on you? Lean on you means that you would do the reparation. I'd show you what was wrong. You would do the reparation. You'd make up for God's glory. You'd fill in the voids. Is that okay? It's just the connection between the two. That's the advantage of teaching several books at the same time. Louisa then, he said, this is why I clung to you. You see, that she's his staff. S-T-A-F-F, that you might free me and take me with you. So Louisa said, I clasped him to myself, I kissed him and found myself with him in my little room. And I could see in between me and Jesus how my interior was centralized in him. This is the union. And he was centralized in me. So naturally enough, he would come to her looking for reparation or whatever else. Afterwards, Louisa said, I received Holy Communion, and according to my usual way, I was calling on all creation. She's going to do a round now. Is that okay? The rest of this paragraph, the whole of this paragraph is a round. I was calling on all created things, placing them around Jesus, so that all might surround him like a crown and give him return of love and homage. You see, she's acting like the staff now. He came to her to lean on her, and then she acts like the staff. If you write down Acts like the staff and just say CF volume 11, because it was in volume 11 that he told us that he would come to us, that we would give him the praise and glory and everything that the others are not giving. So I was calling on all created things, placing them around Jesus so that all might surround him like a crown and give him love and homage to their creator. They all ran at my call, and I could see in clear notes all the love of my Jesus for me in all of these created things. Jesus waited with such great tenderness of love within my heart, the return of so much love. And I, hovering over everything and embracing everything, would bring myself to the feet of Jesus and say to him, "My love, my Jesus, you have created everything for me. And you've given it to me as a gift. Therefore, everything is mine. And I give it to you in order to love you." Now, before I go on, I just want to put CF, look up John 17. Because in the priestly prayer of Jesus in John 17, Jesus speaks to the Father like this: "You've given everything to me, and now I give them back to you." And this is what he teaches here in this round. So you've given everything to me and as a gift, and I give them back to you. And so I say to you, I love you in each drop of light of the sun. I love you in the twinkling of the stars. So you can see where I got that in the rounds of creation that I gave you. I love you in each drop of water. Your love makes me see your I love you for me, even in the depths of the ocean. And I impress my I love you for you in every fish that darts in the sea. I want to impress my I love you on the flight of each bird. I love you everywhere, my love. I want to impress my I love you upon the wings of the wind. I love that expression. In the moving of the leaves and every spark of fire. I love you for myself and for all. Okay. So the whole of creation was with me saying, "I love you." But when I wanted to embrace all human generations in the eternal volition, to have all prostrate themselves before Jesus so that all might fulfill the duty of saying, "I love you" to Jesus in each one of their acts, words and thoughts, they would escape me. You'd never guess why, would you? And I would get lost and I would not know how to do it. So I said to Jesus, and he said, "Yet, my daughter, the living in my will is precisely this: to bring the whole of creation before me." Here's something that's a very important teaching. What does the living in the divine will consist of? It's to bring the whole of creation before me and in the name of all to give me a return of their duties. No one must escape you. Otherwise, my will would find some voids in the creation and would not be satisfied. But do you know why you do not find everyone and that many escape you? It is the force of the free will. However, I want to teach you the secret of where you can find them all. Enter into my humanity. Do you see? All human beings are in the humanity of Jesus, and the church is the mystical body of Christ. Okay. And you'll be told several times in the hours of the Passion that we're all part of him. So when we enter into his humanity and into his divinity, we can find them. But if we make the mistake of just entering into his divinity without going through the humanity as well, you won't find them. Is that okay? So he says, enter into my humanity and into my divinity. So I want to teach you the secret of where you find them all. Enter into my humanity, and in it you will find all of their acts as though held in custody, which I took on the commitments to satisfy for on their behalf before my celestial Father. You must keep following all of my... Okay. I want to teach you the secret of where you can find all human beings. Enter into my humanity, and in it you will find all of their acts as though held in custody, which I took on the commitment to satisfy for on their behalf before my celestial Father. You must keep following all of my acts, which were the acts of all. And in this way, you will find everything and will give me the return of love for everyone and for everything. You can only do it through him, with him, and in him, as the church has already always taught us, through him, with him, and in him. Everything is in me. Having done it for all, in me is the deposit of everything. And I render to my divine Father the duty of love for all. And whoever wants it can use it as the way through which to ascend to heaven. So we go through the humanity, through the divinity, and in Jesus we find everyone and everything. Okay. Now, so Louisa immediately said, I entered into Jesus, and with ease I found everything and everyone. So I entered into his humanity as well as entering his divinity. And following the works of Jesus, I would say, I love you in each thought of the creature. So you see where I got that as well? Mm-hmm. I love you on the flight of each gaze. I love you in the sound of a word. I love you in each heartbeat, breath, and affection. I love you in each drop of blood and in each work and in each step. But who can say all that I would do and say? She only gives you an example. Many things one is not able to say. Even more, whatever one can say is said very poorly compared to the way it is said when one is together with Jesus. And then while saying, I love you, I found myself inside of myself. Okay, I think that's an appropriate place to stop.